The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on the action on Bet Online.
Yeah, dude, I'm going to make some big bets. Patrick Mahomes is going to win the MVP again. Or do you think maybe Russell Wilson?
Woo-hoo. Russell Wilson, maybe Josh Allen? I mean, he's kind of balling out right now.
P. Mahomes.
Okay. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than any other place online. And there's always the online casino as well. It never closes, Benny.
Well, you know what I'm going to do then? Head to betonline.ag today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's betonline.ag and sign up today.
Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
You're listening to PSI, the podcast. With Benny Philhaber, Dowsy Joe, and Arco Para. Enjoy!
This is one of the worst intros I've ever heard.
Wow, Sal. All right. Outro.
This is, hey, Ike, man. I'm trying to recruit for New Mexico United. I've done my research, man. I know you're a
Welcome to BSI the Podcast, episode 40.
Yeah, and welcome back
Ike
you.
Ike doesn't even like give welcome me anything anymore. You. He used to give me stuff, and now he just gives me.
I don't have time for your nonsense. You try to throw the bait out, and I'm not biting anymore. I just refuse.
I genuinely, it comes out in a way where I'm not even actually trying to be funny anymore, but it's just like, that's how I introduce the podcast, and I never know what episode, but I always say episode, and I'm like, I don't know the episode.
What's funny is we don't ever think beforehand or even in our talks before about what we're going to talk about. Do we ever say, hey, remember, it's episode blank blank or whatever.
We don't even prepare for these podcasts. I don't even know why people listen to them.
Anyways.
Episode 40. So we are getting USL co-coach of the year. I'm gonna present him as the coach of the year. We'll see if he corrects me. But co-coach of the year from New Mexico, Troy Lusane. I hope I'm pronouncing that properly. But do we have anything else before I actually formally bring him on to the show?
No. That was a perfect intro.
All right, let's
That's
do
one of the
this,
worst man. Intros I've heard.
Welcome to the show, Troy. Welcome, Troy Lusane, USL Coach of the Year. Did I get that one right?
Co-Coach of the Year, yes.
Yes.
Co-Coach of the Year. All right, we're not interviewing the other coach, so we just got one coach here today. So congratulations on that, and welcome on the show.
Thanks very much for having me. No business being on with you guys, man. I've enjoyed listening to a lot of the different podcasts. It's awesome being with you.
It's our pleasure, man.
Coming on.
Thank you.
All right, so if you've listened to some of the podcasts and you know, we'll start with some quick hitters, get you warmed up. We'll get into the interview portion, and then we'll let you get on the hot seat for Ike's interrogation. So
Depending how honest you are with us, the nicer I'll be.
I'm wondering where it's going to go. Like, the last time that we saw one another, it was when you were thrashing the Mexico United 6-1 in the U.S. Open Cup.
So. He'll bring that up. Don't worry.
Yeah, but he reminded us that you guys took the lead. So,
yeah, we'll get to it.
Best 8 minutes in New Mexico United history.
All right, let's go. Quick hitters. First question. Klopp, Pep, or Mourinho? If you had to pick one.
I would probably go with Klopp because it's fashionable right now, but I'm a huge Guardiola fan. Mourinho's last. Yeah. Mourinho's last for me.
All right. Mourinho, I mean, if you go back to, I mean, Mourinho was the man, I guess, when we were all, I mean, we're all kind of similar age, and when we were, what, 20, 25 maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, he was just the guy, right?
He's out of style now.
The special one, as he called himself, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, Klopp's definitely, he's special as well, and Pep's obviously got his special ways, but it's good to know. I kind of agree. I think Pep's
pretty
special.
I'd go Klopp, 1,000%, yeah.
You like Klopp?
In the current power
you're
rankings.
German boy.
Current power rankings.
I am a German guy, but I love his fast-paced, like, pressing style. So, yeah.
What Guardiola was able to do in terms of revolutionizing the game, I think that's where his attributes have to come into play. I think he completely changed everything. He changed what Mourinho was doing. And I actually think Klopp has kind of come along and done the same thing now over the last three seasons. So it's interesting to see how different waves of different influences and coaches start to change the game.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely what Pep did in the Premier League to bring a team together and play a completely different style that had never been seen before in the Prem and be extremely successful, not only win, but be just dominant. That was pretty cool.
Absolutely. 100%.
All right. We're going to go off the beaten path a little bit. You guys had a lot of away games this year. So on a long bus ride, what is your go-to DVD for the guys to watch on these trips?
Yeah, man, that's a phenomenal question. And sadly, DVDs are, you know, a thing of the past. So I have to educate these guys on what a DVD is and what it looks like.
Let me guess, were you playing the old Italian national team 4-4-2 video? What was that, Benny? That Bob Bradley would always play?
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about?
No, Bob's always had his different moments, right? So when I was with him at LAFC, it was Barcelona, but we used to watch some games from probably a few years further back. But yeah, I remember with the national team, it was like Gattuso at AC Milan. It was the Italian national team. So he's gone in spurts, but yeah, I do remember that.
And those were probably VHS. So, I mean, I'm in that.
That's true.
I'm very in that true. Space now with DVDs trying to have guys. But when it's time to separate from football, I try to educate them in a different way. So, I mean, I'm putting on like the Shawshank Redemption. Semi-pro on.
Troy, we go. I want to play for you, my friend. I want
to play for you. To Will Ferrell, did we just go from the best movie of all time in Shawshank Redemption to semi-pro?
Hey, that's the beauty. You have to give them both the seriousness as well as the comedic relief. And Ike, man, I'm trying to recruit for New Mexico United. I've done my research, man. I know you're a semi-pro.
Last question of the quick hitters. Harder job, coach or technical director?
Technical director, by far. It's for me, at least, from the standpoint that I think when you're doing both jobs together, that becomes more difficult because you're obviously managing the salary budget. You're trying to manage relationship with agents and making sure that you do the right job. Coordinating with them and making them happy as best you can. Also, the players have a firm understanding that you're the decision maker, both on the field as well as off the field, in relationship to your salary budget. So I think it's also not in my nature necessarily. I'd much rather be on the field coaching, giving direction than, you know, hammering out contracts. And that's what I've been doing over the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks since we finished the season. And it's difficult. It's the most difficult part of my job, I think.
Yeah. Especially like you said, you have to balance player relationships on the field and then the harsh reality of, you know, what they have to make and things like that. It just becomes a, I don't know. I've always kind of felt like it should be done by two separate people, but obviously those two separate people should be working like closely together so that they're on the same page of what type of players to get and whatnot. But it's tough to handle that relationship. I feel like it's really hard. So.
At the USL level, what I'll say though is just, you know, financially, I think it makes sense for one person to be able to do both jobs while it is a lot. But there's also a lot of transparency in it. You know, I mean, I'm a firm believer in just telling guys exactly where they stand. That's part of my coaching philosophy. So it actually helps double down on that whenever you're making those decisions as well.
Yeah. You kind of feel like they already kind of know what they're getting into towards the end of the year, where they stand. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. I agreed. I think more work, but at least you're getting the guys that you believe in there and how you can, you know, shape your team. So you can definitely sometimes miss that other guy to do some of the work for you and kind of help you, but then you don't know if you're going to get, you know, exactly the players that you're looking for, and then you're dealt, you know, the hand that you're dealt. So
yeah,
it's probably a pretty good thing.
A unique situation too. Our owner is also our president and CEO, so he's in the trenches with us, and he's a little bit of that buffer, because you do need to have some separation at some point. So obviously he's the owner telling me exactly what I can work with. And I think that it does help that he's also the president and CEO as well. And I think he's the best in the USL. He's phenomenal.
Nice.
Yeah. You're not alone. And obviously USL and MLS having two roles and having to compartmentalize that, to me, is one of the most difficult things in the world, because, you know, if you're negotiating with the guy and he feels like he's worth more than he is, and then he walks out on the practice field in your head and he has a shit day of practice, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, well, that's why you don't deserve what you're asking for. You know what I mean? So you have to, and I know that it's just human nature that would pop up into people's minds, but you have to figure out a way to separate the two. And I think that that's a really difficult job.
100%. And I'll also say, I think that for the most part in the USL, the salary discrepancies aren't that great necessarily, like mm-hmm. it would be in the MLS with DPs and, you know, players. You're also seeing what players are paid from a transparency point. Whereas in the USL, it's pretty well known what guys are making, but it's not put out there like it is in the MLS. That also, there's, you know, some there's something that's not necessarily always told that I hope actually starts to trend in the other direction, where there's more clarity on what players are being paid. I think that would actually help all the franchises to have that information out there at some point. And it would push other franchises to start to pay their players more, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, those are the quick hitters. Now you should be warmed up. And Sal, go ahead. You hit him with the first question of the interview.
So let's get in a little bit about your career as a player. So you went to the College of Charleston, grew up in Charleston, later helped coach that team, then went to Charleston Battery. Like, so Charleston's a huge part in your life, but let's talk about the college part and, you know, what was your favorite memories back then and what type of player were you?
Well, Sal, the reason you're going to talk about the college part is because the pro part is very short. the college of Charleston, did you guys ever go down in the preseason? Have you been to Charleston before?
I feel like I did with Atlanta. We played Charleston Battery and we had a few little tournament out there. Yeah.
I think it's one of the best cities in the U.S.
Yeah.
I'm from North Carolina. So,
okay.
So Charleston is the only place that should be in North Carolina. The rest of South Carolina, but carry on.
I can't agree with that, being someone who's from South Carolina, but I understand why you say it. But yeah, I had a phenomenal experience at the College of Charleston. We were an underrated team, kind of an underdog team that ended up progressing to be one of the top teams towards the end of my senior year in the country. And so from that time period, I ended up, from playing my senior year, I ended up being a volunteer assistant coach at the College of Charleston in 2005 and 2006 while playing for the Charleston Battery. So that's how I was able to get into coaching in the first place, was playing professionally. And I use the term playing very loosely because I played, you know, a handful of matches for the Charleston Battery. But I was able to start my coaching career. And what I realized was my playing career wasn't going to go very far. And I really enjoyed working at the College of Charleston and coaching players and bringing them along. both on the field and off the field. And yeah, so that's where it all began.
Real quick question. I remember playing with Atlanta. The first team played against the Battery. They were looking for a second team to play. They ended up playing against the College of Charleston, I'm pretty sure. So correct me if I'm wrong. There's a coach that was there that had been there for, I don't know how long, 40 years.
That's right?
Something like that. Okay, so the terminology he was using was just making everyone laugh on the bench. Now, were you his assistant?
I was Coach Lundy's assistant.
Okay. What are some of the funniest things you've heard come out of his mouth? Because I kid you not, there was guys rolling on the ground watching that game. Some of the, I don't even know, like he was talking about offsides in a funny way or something. It was really
Coach was, he was a pioneer in the game. You know what I mean? Like Lundy, he started off at the College of Charleston. He was there maybe in like 1987 or 88.
Oh, wow.
So he was one of the first, you know, coaches to bring the college game along in a big way. And it changed and it evolved over the years. And I think he did too. But then there's some phrases to your point that he would use often. I mean, we would play some crazy exercises that him and I would argue nonstop. We play exercises like your team has a total of 18 total touches to get to goal. I don't know how that's possible without, you know, being extremely direct. But these are the types of concepts sometimes that we would go back and forth about. But he gave me my first shot as a player because I was kind of a walk-on of sorts, as well as a volunteer assistant coach. I got a message from him the other day and he was congratulating me and he was like, man, you've dug a lot of ditches in your day. And that's how I actually got paid through Coach Ralph Lundy. Was I actually went to his house and would do like yard work for him back in 2005 and 2006. So he's got some funny catchphrases for sure, but like I'd do anything.
I'm sure the mental side of the game is what you learned so much, you know, from him. I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. In some capacity. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So then you then go to, you know, Charleston Battery. Well, first as a player, talk about that. You said it was short, but you know, what did you kind of learn as a professional at that time?
Yeah, it's ironic, man, because I played for Mike Anhauser and Augie is what he's known. He's been there since his first season as the head coach was my rookie season as well. And he's been there ever since, which longevity in the pro game at any level is difficult to come by. So what I took away from him was, you know, he gave me that opportunity, but he also, he wasn't necessarily, and he still isn't like a relationship guy. He's not a guy that's trying to connect with the players on too deep of a level. But what he does give you is a really like good tactical know-how. And he's by far the best identifier of talent, particularly at the USL level. Ozzie Alonso, that's a good example. And Ozzie's a phenomenal player, came through the Charleston Battery. Ian Fuller, Lazo Alavagna. There's just so many names that played for the Charleston Battery that are top players. And it's because Augie was a great identifier of talent. But that said, I knew what my ceiling was, and I could clearly see that I wasn't going to make the cut to the next level. So that accelerated my coaching career, actually. So long story short, Augie was the guy that basically, you know, let me understand how I was as a pro and where it was going. But then he also gave me a chance to come back and be an assistant coach in 2014. So it's crazy how full circle it was with him.
Yeah. Kind of went, you know, you went there, then you went back to College of Charleston, then you went back to Charleston. So, it was pretty interesting. So real quick, so moving on. So now you're assistant at what's it called? At Charleston Battery. So, you know, now that you're there, it said that you started working with players a little bit more at the professional level because you had just come from College of Charleston where you're there 10 years. You go there. What was the biggest difference, you know, as far as the leap you had to make to the USL?
Yeah, I've been asked this question a lot from a lot of coaches that are at the college level that want to progress.
Benny wants to know, actually, so that's why I was asking.
I think Benny's probably a good example of this. There's and all three of you are, but I can only assume Benny from listening to the podcast as well as. I've heard some stories about some of those that have coached you, which is interesting.
Oh, can't wait to hear this.
There's nothing like coming into a room and thinking that you're prepared and you're giving information to players and, you know, they either call you on what you're talking about or they disagree with you. And so what I enjoyed the most about going from college to pro was college players are pretty much going to do what you say. You know, they're young, they're a little bit naive, and they're still in that developmental stage of their process towards becoming a top player, if that's their goal. And so they're going to follow your lead. Pro players, though, they're going to question everything. And so you have to be on point, you know, you have to be on point and at all times. And also it matters. I think there's a pressure that's there, not only with the players that you're trying to convince and lead, but just the results in general. I don't think there's that pressure at enough college programs. And so, you know, as a result, those two things of both trying to convince the players and making sure that you're on point all the time, as well as the pressure that's ramped up for winning, that was the biggest difference for me going from college to pro.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I mean, I think that, look, right now I'm assistant with the UCLA staff. And I mean, obviously we all went to college. We were all there as players at one point, but 15 years down the road, you probably hardly remember what it was like to be a player in college, and you're much more aware of what it's like to be a player at the professional level. So me now transitioning as a coach back into the college, scene, it is different. You know, the player, it's true. I mean, I think that there's definitely a transition period when you first get in to try and gain everybody's trust. And that they know that, look, you're here for their well-being. You're trying to make them a better player, the team a better player. You're not just saying things to say them. But there is some truth to, once you get past that, I wouldn't say it's a tough barrier to cross, but once you get past that barrier, people really want to listen to you and absorb everything you say. Whereas we know as players at the professional level, there's so many times a coach will say something, we're like, wait, let me think about that and make sure that makes sense. And if it doesn't, then you talk to somebody else, like, does that make sense? And then sometimes you'll even talk to the coach and be like, hey, I don't understand this. Like, where are you going with this? And so there's definitely more there's more give, or I think as a player at the professional level, you definitely expect more give and take. Whereas a college player is more like, give me all the information I can get, and I'm going to try and, you know, proceed with that in some way, shape, or form.
But I'll tell you though, man, that trust and relationship piece that you're talking about, that's essential to, and I think that's a big part of where the game's starting to progress to at the professional level. I think the more that you can have that for professional players as well, the more you're going to get, you know, the right answer on the field for anything tactically that you're trying to bring across to them. Even if they disagree or they see it in a different way, because you establish that relationship, I'm a big proponent of that with what we do at New Mexico United, and part of my philosophy is just having reciprocal relationships, and you know, you do that by having the right trust and the right relationship with a player at all times. So I think, man, I would say it goes beyond just the college game. I think that you're seeing more and more professional organizations, top coaches, you know, Jesse Marsh is a good example. Like, they connect with players on a different and on a deeper level. And I think that the results follow that.
Definitely. So we recently had Matt Beasley on the show, and we talked about he and longtime teammate Cetsinovic's new venture with State Soccer. They have teamed up with a talented group to build a brand that represents soccer in America the way it deserves.
Yeah, and Matt sent us some gear last week, and honestly, we were blown away by the quality. These guys are truly building something special for the sport and its culture. So naturally, since BSI and States align so well, we are excited to announce they are now our official sponsor.
So this episode is brought to you by States, an athletic lifestyle brand building a revolution of American sport. Their goal is to be leading lifestyle brand for soccer in America. They're building a brand that truly represents the beautiful game.
Yeah, and now they are offering 15% off with the discount code BSI to our listeners as part of the sponsorship.
Go check out their website at states.soccer. There's no .com. It's simply states.soccer. And their Instagram is definitely worth a follow, at statesoccer. Go check them out.
Yeah, so you've obviously heard, you know, you said you've listened to our podcast, so you know we have our PIs around kind of the USL that know everything about you. So one thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, we heard that you have a notebook that you like to keep with football tactics, philosophies. You know, do you still have that? And if you do, you know, how thick is it now?
Yeah, man, I'm interested to know who told you that now. But I mean,
do you have it there? Can we see how thick it is?
I don't have
like George Costanza's wallet in Seinfeld.
I was told, and in quotes, it must be like the Bible by now. So, so it's got to be pretty thick.
Man, from Coach Lindy to Mike Anhauser to Mike Jeffries with the Battery, or excuse me, the Charlotte Independents, Carl Robinson with the Whitecaps, the Charlotte Independents, and also the Colorado Rapids had an affiliation. So I got to see Pablo work. I got to see Anthony Hudson work. So, I mean, I spent 15 years as an assistant coach. So the amount of information that I accumulated is probably like the Bible. I'd say it's probably even more now that I've been in the head coach role. As much as I learned as an assistant, man, you have no idea the amount that you don't know until you're that decision maker as the head coach. So that is true. I have multiple little books now because it's not all one. And I keep a lot of notes in my phone actually now, which I don't know if I like quite as much, but that's
modern technology, you know.
Do you go back to
make you feel like you worked for it as much, right? Because it's all stored in this little thing. Whereas a book, it just gets thicker and thicker. It's like it feels good 100%. Looking at it.
I like the Costanza reference too, man. I'm a huge Seinfeld fan.
Did you ever go back to like the first page of the first book and see like what was I doing or what did I learn? Like, how did I never know that?
The shocking thing is like some of the exercises that I would try to come up with, and then like, and some of the beginning was when I was doing like my B and my A license, and man, I got to be around some incredible people in those licensing programs, but seeing some of the exercises that I would bring forward 10 years ago, and I would never in a million years do these things now with players because it's ridiculous. Like I was trying to create all these situational, you know, things on the field. And so I don't know. I think that that's where I've evolved is just to simplify things. I think that that's probably the biggest area that I've improved in.
So then you go to the
page one on the Benny Failhaber book is going to be 5v2 though.
There you go.
Just so you know.
Page 1 through 100.
I can teach you anything, huh? All right. So then you move on to the Charlotte Independents. So from what I can tell, that's your first time kind of venturing out of Charleston. You know, how was that? And then, you know, yeah, just how was it kind of getting out of your shell?
Well, I grew up, man, in West Columbia, South Carolina. So I was in West Columbia prior to Charleston.
And oh, okay.
And again, Ike's already made a knock on South Carolina. There are no other cities, apparently, besides.
It's brutal. No, they are. They're just brutal. Except for like two others, maybe, debatably.
But so yeah, my first venture out of South Carolina was moving to Charlotte. And that's where my wife is from, actually. And she was quite the player at the College of Charleston. I mean, she was a top player herself. That's where we met. And again, she's from Charlotte. So we ended up making a decision for both her family as well as the opportunity for myself to move back to an organization that was in its first year. So I was able to go through that process of a first year franchise, which I think really helped me prepare for New Mexico United in a big way. But man, what a phenomenal 4 years there. We ended up the first season, we made a good Open Cup run, made the playoffs a couple seasons, again, worked with some really good players in terms of, you know, like June Marcus Davidson, Enzo Martinez, Bilal Duckett. And I think Mike Jeffries.
I played with Bilal.
Did you play with Bilal? Okay.
In New England.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. Bilal was, I think, a really good leader for our team and still keep in touch with him quite a bit to this day. I'm sure he has some stories, as do you, about the New England days.
those were the days.
There's one story that I can't wait to hear. Maybe we have to have him on in the future, but I won't share it. I just know it.
Yeah, man. Bilal's a first-class human, too. But yeah, so I think Mike Jeffries, my experience for the 4 years with the Charlotte Independents was Mike Jeffries, I think, helped prepare me for what I wanted, which was the next step for a head coaching role. And like I said, man, 15 years. I had 15 years as an assistant. I had a lot of people. I mean, you name a USL franchise, and I've tried to interview or I've tried to get in touch with someone to get in front of them. A lot of no's throughout the year.
And look at you now.
Look at me now.
It's still early in your career. And actually, I have a question about...
Can we make a list of all the loser teams that didn't pick up the coach of the year?
So this is kind of goes into my next point of, so as players, you know, we resonate with certain coaches, whether we've played with them or not, just by, you know, how they have their, you know, tactics, whether it be their personalities, maybe it's a little bit of both. And so for me, when I look around MLS, there are a lot of good coaches and a lot of up and coming coaches, but the four that stand out to me, you know, are PV, Bob Bradley, Bruce Arena, and actually Jim Curtin, and who, yeah, I resonate with. And so I'm kind of, and again, there are a lot of good coaches like Lucci, I think he's doing a great job, Oscar Pereja, we can go down the list. But for you, who do you watch in MLS and say, okay, that person is somebody, not necessarily you aspire to be, but you respect how they approach the game and their team and or organization?
Yeah, so I use the it's a great question. I use the 2 months that we were off for the quarantine period in April and May, and not only myself but my staff as well. We tried to connect with as many coaches that we admired, that we wanted to model ourselves after as possible. And man, you'd be surprised at how available a lot of these guys are. And I think it speaks volumes about who they are, you know, as individuals and how they probably connect with their players, Jim Curtin being one of them. Jim Curtin gave me, you know, an hour on the phone, invited me into his Zoom sessions, you know, just was just wide open about trying to say, hey, this is what we do. And I'd love to get your perspective on what you're doing at New Mexico United. And you're seeing the obviously success that he's having this year. And I don't think it's any surprise because again, the way that he connects with his players, as well as how I think Sharpie is in the game. I think that they have a really clear style of play. And you know, watching them play the other night, actually, whenever they win the Supporters Shield, it really is impressive what he's done. Outside of the MLS, another coach that I was able to connect with is, and I know you guys have talked about him a lot, Sal, obviously you spent a lot of time with him, but I'm actually in the pro license right now. And I did my presentation on Jesse Marsh. And I was able to get an hour with Jesse as well. And that was like, man, for me, I didn't expect to even speak to the guy, but he gave me so much time, was so generous. And, yeah. Those two guys to me, they're actually really close, which I didn't know, Jim and Jesse. Those two are two, yeah, that I aspire to be like.
Yeah, quick story about Jesse, because you all know I talk him up like crazy. But just to kind of show you the type of guy he is, you know, we had just come off 2015 winning Supporters Shield. We played Columbus in the opening game. We lost. We then play against Columbus at home. I think we won the game 1-0, but because we lost on away goals. Anyways, after the game, you know, my wife is walking in the hall with my kids, and you know, obviously Jesse and everybody's pretty beat up. We hit the post in the 94th minute that could have tied it, and even in that moment where, you know, he can normally just be, you know, an asshole or whatever he wants to be at that moment, right? And you would kind of understand, he was still like, oh, you know, how are you doing, Destiny? How are the kids? And he's just so down to earth. And I, like you said, he'll talk to you for an hour on the phone just to kind of help you out, because that's the guy he is. So
this is what I was saying earlier. I think that matters. That matters, yeah, to the modern day player, that you're connecting, mm-hmm, beyond just what you're doing on the field. And yeah, one of the things he told me was, to that point, one of the first things he does in a club is he gets a list of everyone's, you know, family, both, yeah, in the front office, the technical side, and the players. So he's good at remembering names, and that means something to both him and the players that and people that he's working with, that he every single day is interacting with. Yeah. And yeah, man.
Look, it's a story that I, you know, that I remember, right, from my 3 years there. It's one of the one stories that sticks with me the most. So just kind of shows you the type of person he is.
100%.
And I'm sure I'm going to get killed by fan bases for forgetting the coaches like Greg Vanney and Smetcher. Like, I get it, guys.
Yeah. I'll throw my 2 cents in Coach of the Year, since we were, you know, talking about a lot of MLS coaches, and you did mention him. But I think what Oscar Pereja has done in Orlando and that organization that has been terrible since they've come into the league, and he in 1 year not only got them to the playoffs, but I think they're a legit candidate to win.
I agree with you, Benny.
Really good team. He made Nani a legit DP.
A total mind shift with that team over there. They actually believe that they can do something.
Chris Mueller decided to show Sal what kind of player he was, because Sal wasn't a true believer yet.
I said one comment, and now they're just killing me.
Oscar's done a great job. But Curtin better get the trophy.
I think Curtin maybe about. Just. I think Oscar's done a better job over this year than Curtin has, but I think Curtin's the reason why Curtin's going to win is because he's developed a team for over what I don't know how long he's been there. Like six
I would say months. Credit to the technical, you know, the front office staff at Philadelphia for not firing Curtin, because I'm sure there was many times where his job was maybe on the line. So
that's true as well. And that's the end of part one with Troy Lussain. Check in tomorrow for part two.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.